I was doing this for my husband. It was never about me. I told people that I was drowning in his dream because barbecue and food and all that stuff was always his thing.
Phyllis Williams Strotter, also known as the ghetto country brandmother and the driving force behind Brandma's House. Let's talk about your brand and then we'll go higher level on how we could take what you've done for your brand, talk about who you are, what you do, the whole branding behind it.
The Ghetto Country Brandmother came about as really as an unplanned thing. I understood branding and I started getting into branding and I love branding now. And that was what kind of pushed me towards it. Brand identity is based on the DNA code. It is not based on how you're perceived or logos and all that kind of stuff. Branding is an asset. And just like any other brand, your personal brand should be an asset.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with the Ghetto Country Brandmother, Phyllis. Philly, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good, sweetie. How are you?
I'm excited to be here with you. This was one of those things we started to talk and we're like, we just got to click record because I think this is going to be a fruitful conversation. You're insightful and I love that.
Well, thank you ever so much. I try to be. I've been on this earth for 58 years. So I think I learned a thing or two in all that time.
Good for you. And I've heard you on other shows and I know you've got, you're going to deliver here. So one time, guys, I got to read from the script because I want to introduce you guys to Phyllis. Phyllis Williams Strotter, also known as the Ghetto Country Brandmother and the driving force behind Brandma's House, where she helps personal brands grow the fuck up. I didn't write that. She did. Phyllis is a rebel brand strategist and former barbecue restaurant co-owner of the multi-million dollar brand Big Mister's Barbecue and Sandwich Shop. Nowadays, she's also an author, podcast host, and a brand expert. So if y'all were under that rock, we've just rolled under and we're going to welcome again Phyllis. You're a brand boss. You're the brand mother. I love it.
You know what? It took me a minute to become the brand ma. And reaching back and looking at when I was in the restaurant industry, I've always had a personal brand and I look at it totally differently than even when I originally had one. Because back in the day in the restaurant times, I was known as Mrs. Mister to my husband's Big Mister. And the things that I learned and the lessons I learned is the reason why I approach personal branding differently. So it does not make sense for me anymore the way people talk about personal branding or even trying to apply business branding to people. That shit just irritates me no end. So I'm not that person.
You think about, so there's a couple things brought up here. So first off, what was the branding like in the restaurant industry? And you just mentioned how like you think about things differently. So we're going to follow up, like, where were you? Where did you begin? And then we'll get into kind of how you've transformed and some of the lies in branding that you've learned over the years. But let's get started with, so you and your husband, you guys are cooking barbecue. Tell us a little bit about that.
I got my name. My name, I did not come up with it. It was given to me because my husband has been known as Big Mister forever and a day. It was something that we came into the business with. And so it just kind of made sense to name the business after him because he was the cook. But then people started calling me Mrs. Mister. They called my daughter Minnie Mister. And it was just something that evolved so quickly and so easily that I just didn't think about it. But it was my getting wrapped up in it. And I talk about having identity crisis with personal branding. And I did. I didn't think anybody valued Phyllis nearly as much as they valued Mrs. Mister. Mm. So I stayed her as much as possible. Whether I was at home, at work, at the grocery store, I was always Mrs. Mister. My customers would see me in the streets. Hey, Mrs. Mister, you got any barbecue? Mm. And that shit started to get on my nerves.
Who?
And it was understanding those different things of people not being able to see me outside of the smoke that when I got to this point of understanding branding and personal branding, that I knew that I wanted to do something different and be something different and create those boundaries around, okay, you need to understand where I began and the ghetto country grandmother begins, because they are not one and the same. Mm-hmm. There are only pieces that I allow to come into ghetto country grandmother that you will never see as Phyllis. I had an experience while I was just recently on vacation. My husband is a food person. I am not a food person, but I was taking all of these food photos for my husband. All of I was getting on my own nerves. And I placed them on Facebook. Facebook now has a thing that it will take your post and put it on your Instagram. Mm-hmm. I am very intentional about not sharing my family and friends on Instagram or on any of my business accounts. Facebook is my only personal account. Everything else is Ghetto Country Grandmother. So when I saw my food picture showing up on my Instagram, it kind of pissed me off, because I tell people, I don't need to see your toast and your toes when you're about your business. It doesn't matter to me. So when my food picture started to show up on there, it crossed the boundary. But it was something that I didn't know that would happen, because, like I said, if you guys don't know, Meta went and flipped a switch. So what's on your personal account now shows up in your Instagram, and I had to turn it off. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about it is, one of the pictures that I posted, the company that we were cruising with asked if they repost one of my pictures. They have a certain amount of time to use that picture, and then I'm archiving all of those pictures off, because that's not what I do. And people know that, because I set that boundary. Those pictures were from my husband and my friends and family on Facebook. It was never for Instagram, because I believe in setting boundaries around what Ghetto Country Grandmother is about. She's not about the food. She don't give two shits about food, except my husband calling me for dinner. It's a thing for me.
I want to, first off, profound, and I'm going to slingshot back to this in a second, because it kind of correlates that you are Mrs. Mister, and so that was not you. Who was Mrs. Mister, and why was that misaligned? Because now you're calling your own shots, but why was there misalignment with that brand that you kind of were fed into? Like, you didn't choose it for yourself.
It wasn't so much that it was misaligned. It was more that I was doing this for my husband. It was never about me. I told people that I was drowning in his dream, because barbecue and food and all that stuff was always his thing. So I was the one that always initiated stuff, because I truly believed in my husband. Mm-hmm. And that faith in him and what he could do as far as making a restaurant, I just owned Mrs. Mister. But like I said, because I had grown up with so many insecurities and all of this kind of stuff, knowing that, you know, ooh, people are calling me, people want to interview me, people want me to be on TV. Excuse me. I got caught up. Mm-hmm. But it was never about misalignment, because me and my husband, we love to entertain. We love to have people over. So to be in a restaurant and do that and hold people's babies and feed them food and have conversation, that was that was a jam.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that is actually running the business, the invoices, the contracts, the catering, the BS, the people ghosting, the people not showing up for work, people spilling my food. It was. All of that was on the other side. I don't cook on purpose. So to be in this dynamic was not my idea of fun. But I enjoyed the perks of being Mrs. Mister, the notoriety that I got. Mm. Didn't necessarily like the TV stuff. I did it, but wasn't crazy about the TV stuff. But yet and still, everybody knew who Mrs. Mister was by way of Big Mister.
Big Mister.
And I embraced that. And that's when I started having identity crisis with myself.
And first off, correct me. I'm never going to put words in your mouth. So correct me as much as you want when I say things like alignment. And so you guys built a multi-million dollar brand. Why exactly did you step away from that? What did that look like?
I love my husband a whole lot, as we've been together for over 20. I love him so much.
I get nervous that you started with that part.
He's my joy and my pain in the ass at the same time. we hung in there for 10 years doing it. But it was never my thing. Like I said, I truly do not cook on purpose. My husband has been cooking for me since our first date. And to put me in a situation, the more popular he got, because like I said, he started getting jobs as a spokesperson and doing TV and all of this kind of thing. And those things pulled him away. So I had to start stepping up and being in the kitchen and understanding how to trim a brisket and trimming. I don't want to know that shit on purpose. I really don't. And so the more popular he got, the more I got pulled into the kitchen and the more I was disillusioned by what we were doing. Like I said, love it on one side and hated it on the other. So I quit and I fired myself multiple times. I didn't really mean it because I did not want to leave my husband in this thing by himself.
Right.
But it finally came a point where I had to truly say, you know what, I'm done. And it hurt me no end because my husband is good at this. He's made for this. I just was not the right business partner for him in this because it was not my thing. But it was also something, my husband is very, how do I put it, partner oriented, or he grew up on a football team. Mm-hmm. So he's all about teamwork. And his best team is me. I'm that one that's going to push him. I'm that one that's going to ride his ass. I'm the one that he could fuss and bitch at and all of these type of things and still love him when the day is done. So to leave him out there doing this thing by himself, I kind of knew, but I just could not do it anymore. I knew that it was not going to work without me. It could have, but only if my husband changed, and that was not going to happen. So when I left with the intention. I'm like, baby, are you going to do it? He said, baby, I got this. You go do your thing. Because we've always been very supportive. And then as I started to do my thing, I said, okay, I have to travel a little bit. What are you going to do? Because he will still call me on occasion about invoices and different things. He said, well, I'm a roll with you. And I said, so what does that mean? This is how quickly we decided to close down our business. Mm. We had this conversation in June. We announced that our last day was going to be July 23rd. We sold our house as is, packed up our shit, and moved to Oregon by August. That's how quickly it happened.
Wow.
2 months.
It was because we seldom argue about anything. And like I said, we've always been very supportive. So my thing for him is like, he said, you let me do my thing for 10 years. You let me follow my dream. And now I'm going to follow you into yours. Mm. I said, OK, so my thing has been ever since then, I'm making dude a trophy husband. And that's my goal. Because it's excuse me. It allows me to do what I want to do. And he never says like, OK, baby, we need to go get a job. We need to go make some money. We still have the ups and downs like we had in our first business, but because I'm doing something that makes me happy, he rides that roller coaster with me. He's been riding it with me since I left in 2018. And I just love him for that. Like I said, I ain't saying we all gravy, but it just is what it is.
I'm thinking me and the person at home, all the ladies at home are like, wow, you found a good man. He'll cook. He wants to partner. He wants to ride the roller coaster with you. You guys communicate. Yeah. So you guys make a move in like 60 days or less. Like, you're going quick. What happens next? Like, I mean, that's a big decision. What a lot of people that listen to the show are already entrepreneurs, owners, but a lot of them are like, they got a side hustle or they're just listening for entertainment and kind of thinking about it. What's it look like in those first days when you're like, oh my gosh, I'm doing this. What did you do?
You know what? When the most fearful moment that I ever had in business as an entrepreneur was when I quit my job. Neil, when we started our business, like I said, we started our business at the kitchen table. We were serving lunches from there and all that kind of thing. And then when we started talking about taking this more seriously, I said, okay, do you want to do this full time? And he jumped on it. Hell yeah. But we made the decision. We started in November of 2008. And we said, okay, my stepson, his son would be 18. We were going to do this as a side hustle until Ashton turned 18. And then we were going to quit. And what ended up happening is that in February, we got so popular that Neil quit his job in February. That's how quickly we took off. It was totally unexpected. And I'm telling you guys, if you ever, ever feel like things are being rushed, I totally advise stepping back just a little bit. Don't lose the momentum, but step back a little bit because it takes you on this roller coaster ride that you're not totally prepared for. And so we end up in all these different farmers markets and we're doing our thing. and I'm still trying to hold down a job. Neil has burnt all his ties and gave up his suits. And so we did this because we were able to replace his income. Had it not been for replacing his income, it still would have been a side hustle, put it that way. Mm-hmm. But once, because I was still doing so much of the things that I helped him with, when my boss came at me and gave me a bad review and told me I should quit my job, she said the wrong thing. And that was the scariest moment, because I went home and I told Neil, I was upset. How the hell is she going to tell me to quit my job? She has an inheritance. She gets paid more than me. And she going to, and Neil told me to quit. We had no plan. We had no preparation for this or anything. And because I had a government job, people were like, oh, you're going to come back, even if it's just for the benefits and all of this kind of stuff. So when I went back to work a little while later, when Neil gave me permission to quit, I went in there and I gave my 2-week notice. And she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm quitting. You told me to quit. She said, I meant in 2 years, not in 2 weeks. I said, well, oh, well, so what? And mind you, I had a 2-year-old daughter. I had a mortgage. I had all of these different things. But I was determined to work my ass off because I was going to prove them wrong. I'm not coming back to this job.
Right.
And as hard as it was, because I promise you, I had already made up my mind. If anyone got sick, there are county hospitals in LA. We just going to have to go to a freaking county hospital. I'm not going to sit up here and worry about benefits and all of that other kind of stuff to tie me to a job that I had come to hate. And so making all these decisions ahead of time, like I said, we did not have a plan for the business, but making all these decisions ahead of time, those were the most fearful times. But any other time we got in trouble or stuff got close to foreclosure or whatever, we wrote it out. But I was never scared because I was never, the thing that I was least afraid of is like, I can lose all the shit. But as long as I still have my husband and my child, I'm good. Mm. I can always go back and get a job. That was the thing. I had skills and talents and ability. I can always go get a job. But as long as I got my husband and my child, y'all can't faze me. You can't make me do something that I do not want to do. And having my daughter made me this person like, you know what? I can show her better than I can tell her. Because having conversations about, oh, well, you have to take a job you hate, but as long as you make enough money, it's okay. No, I'm not selling that bullshit today. And so that was the scariest time for me. And after that, there's nothing I think that ever happened as an entrepreneur that made me any more fearful than in quitting my job with a 2-year-old and a mortgage. My daughter's now 16. She's been homeschooled since fourth grade. She's written 3 books. She has her own investment accounts.
Wow.
I'm good.
I was listening to your podcast. She's doing some of the mid-roll or she's doing some of the ads on the show, right?
Yes. Yes. excuse me for this. I just have a tickle in my throat.
Whether it's a tickle or I gave someone the hiccups once, it always happens on this podcast. I don't know. It's not you.
But it was funny when I asked her to do that. She had to cuss in there because the name of my book is Balance is Bullshit. And she's like, tell daddy to leave the house. I was like, why? I said, do you really think I don't know that you cuss? I said, no, I'm grateful that you're respectful enough not to do it in front of me. But I'm like, seriously, do you think I think you don't cuss? She's like, I know, but daddy, She actually wanted my husband to leave the house so that she could say what I asked her to say. And then when my husband finally heard it, he's like, she way too comfortable saying those words. But since the time she was 2, she has known nothing but us being at home, working from home, and being in business on some level together.
Wow.
So this is the only life she knows is entrepreneurship. My husband was trying to make her get a job recently, but we're in Texas, and it was a bunch of hoops she had to jump through, so we said skip it. But we wanted to do that so she understands that you have choices. Do you want to work or do you want to work for yourself? Pick one. Nobody's not even saying that you have to pick one. If you want to do both, then work out how you're going to do both. But understand these are options that you need to consider as you grow up. You're 16. You don't have to have all the answers, but at least have some of the answers while we're still your safety net. That was the thing.
I have full confidence. She's going to be a queen. She's going to kick butt. She's got great mentors in her life. So that's a positive, right?
You know what? But she's still a teenager.
Right. You know what happens behind the scenes. You know what happens behind the scenes. Yeah.
She's good. She is good.
Let me ask you, and we'll start with like your brand as the Ghetto Country brand mother, and then we'll dissect it a little bit so people can kind of figure out how they'll develop their brand.
Okay. But
to kind of, and tell me if you disagree, I feel like a lot of people are people pleasing. They hear what everyone else is saying and then they just regurgitate it. And then a lot of the branding, I'll throw people under the bus. When it comes to like real estate or financial advisors, I feel like every photo looks the same. Every profile looks the same. Everybody's using the same language. It's a sea of sameness. And you're a brand that is completely going again. You're using cuss words, you're making up words, you're trademarking things. So let's talk about your brand and then we'll go higher level on how we could take what you've done for your brand but apply it into our lives. So to get started, what is the Ghetto Country brand mother? Talk about who you are, what you do, the whole branding behind it.
Okay, so the Ghetto Country brand mother came about as as an unplanned thing. I understood branding and I started getting into branding and I love branding now. And that was what kind of pushed me towards it. But I went when Chris Doe was on Clubhouse in his Clubhouse days, I went up on stage and it was the first time that I said out loud in a room full of people that I was Ghetto Country, that I was raised hood adjacent by a country mama. That means I will have a whole lot of hospitality, but I might still have to kick your ass at some point. So that's how my dad raised me. But it was saying that for the first time in one of his Clubhouse rooms that I had to start believing it. Because one of the things that was always, like I said, I used to feed into my insecurities a lot. And one of the things that always bothered me that despite my education, despite my certifications, despite all of my knowledge, I speak bad English. Good English is my second language. Bad English is my first language. And I always tried to hide that. So when I tell you that I'm Ghetto Country, it's like, sweetie, this is what comes out of my mouth. That I speak the vernacular of my mom and my household. I don't try to speak corporate anymore. I write corporate sometimes and I have to fix that. Because I don't want anyone ever getting confused that, oh, well, you said, are these the same people? I was raised in a corporate environment, had a job since I was 16, never worked at a McDonald's or a fast food place in my life. I've always had office jobs. So that's how I write. But when I open my mouth, shit just fall out. So it's different. So getting on that stage and doing that, it's like, you know what? I have to embrace this in some kind of fashion. And I tell people all the time, even before I got into branding, I was a mother long before I had my daughter, because I'm always mothering on people, regardless of their age or whatever. It does not matter. I've always been that mom voice. So somehow, at some point, I married the two together. You know what? I need to, because I think first I was trying to be the barbecue brand mother. I didn't want to specialize in barbecue restaurants and all that kind of stuff. And I didn't want to brand businesses. And I, at some point, you know what? It's just straight Ghetto Country. So I have to be the Ghetto Country grandmother. I have to be that voice, because if I can get out here and make the money that I make doing what I do, talking how I talk, saying what I say with a bourbon and a cigar on occasion, then sweetie, this makes room for other people. This is not just about me doing my thing my way. I need to be loud enough so that quiet people can get up here. You know what? You can be a little louder. Because you can, I promise you, I don't intentionally try to be offensive, but some people just take offense to how I am. So I'm taking that offense on myself, not as a martyr or anything like that. But if I'm doing this, then sweetie, trust me, your shit is tame compared to mine. Don't let them, let your voice be quieted because somebody else decides that they're offended by it. No. So it's getting into that whole mother vibe of, I'm here for the violence. I'm here to make sure that, you know what? No, you can't shut my babies down. These are my brand babies. So they can be as loud as they want to because they're in grandma's house. But there's something about how you come about. How I flip the script on brand identity is based on the DNA code. It is not based on how you're perceived or logos and all that kind of stuff. Brand identity within a personal brand. Phyllis is not a brand. Ghetto Country Grandmother is a personal brand. It took its cues from Phyllis, but the identity of this, you can't handle all of Phyllis. Hell, my husband can barely handle all of me. So I can't bring all of that to this brand. And figuring that out along the way, because I studied brand strategy, I studied branding, I listened to all these people. Like I said, I have mad respect for all of them, but I no longer agree. I don't believe that how you build a brand strategy for a business can be applied to a person. These are people. They don't come with brands on their asses and saying, you know what, pay me some money. Someone was offended because I said, this is some whole shit and you're giving hoes a bad name. Because you're trying to do something that should not have a dollar sign. Branding is an asset. And just like any other brand, your personal brand should be an asset. And if you decide to sell it or give it away or whatever it is, if someone else came along and thought they can step into the shoes of the ghetto country grandmother, sweetie, how much money you got? Because I might sell it to you. I don't have to be this anymore, but I will never stop being Phyllis. Mm. And so when people go out and when they start their businesses, I don't think they give much consideration to how they're going to get out of it. If you build this brand around, you know what, Phyllis is a brand, she built this business. When somebody comes along and they possibly want to buy it, they're going to buy the assets. They're not going to buy the name. And all of the goodwill and all of the value is in the name. So you know what? I don't put my name on my stuff. Ghetto Country Grandmother is all up and through. If I decide to license it, it never interferes with Phyllis's life. You can say, oh, you're the Ghetto Country Grandmother. Not right now. It's 5 o'clock, baby. I'm off the clock. I'm Phyllis right now. What? And I had to learn to set those boundaries, like I said, because being Mrs. Mister back in the day, I blurred that line all the time. So understanding that personal brands are something that you need to develop just like anything else. Don't step out here and put your whole life on display. That's not what personal branding is about. And I don't give a who said it. Like I said, got mad respect for the people who are in the industry and doing the thing, but I don't agree. I believe that you are taking people's personal life and trying to turn it into a personal brand. And that's not my thing. So it's different for me. It really is.
What about, and this might be like a sliver category, but there are like TikTok, Instagram influencers that quite literally get paid to put on clothes, wear purses, go travel, and they're just taking photos and reels and this and that. And literally the reason people follow them is because we're following their life. Are you thinking, I'm thinking out loud here, but even in a scenario like that, they're probably only showing a fraction of the action, right?
I still think that I have nothing against, if you're an influencer, you're an influencer. That does not make you a personal brand.
Okay.
You gotcha. Have made your lifestyle into something that people want to emulate, and that's great. But still, that is not a personal brand. When I see people get on here and give every freaking opinion they have on everything, sweetie, don't nobody give two shits about your opinion. It's just like when you've heard when different things have popped off and you've heard the comments of people saying, just dribble or just pass the ball. We don't want to hear your opinions on anything, which means that, you know what? They don't care about your personal life. All they care is about the entertainment value, the business value, something of that nature. They don't need to hear everything, because I can promise you, I got a whole lot of opinions on a whole lot of things. But all of them do not make it into my personal brand. If they're not relevant to the game that I'm playing, you don't need to know. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're having a conversation and you decide to put my business in the street, I don't care. That was Phyllis talking. The Ghetto Country Grandmother didn't bring that out. Mm-hmm. And I tell people all the time, Ghetto Country Grandmother is an empathic bitch. Phyllis is a petty bitch. Fuck with me. Two different things. So it's those type of understandings of what it is when you're being an influencer, when you've made a name for yourself, when you've done these things, sweetie, I'm not taking anything away from you. I'm just saying it's not a personal brand. You can argue with me all day long. One, you're going to be arguing with yourself, but I do not agree. If you decide to take what I say personally, then maybe you don't believe it as much as you think you do either, because otherwise you wouldn't have to argue the point. Just say, you know what? I don't give a fuck what she says. I'm an influencer. That's my personal brand. I'm going to do my cool.
Right, yeah.
I'm not stopping you. I'm not telling you not to do it. I'm telling you, I do not agree. That's all it is.
Help me get a little bit of clarity, because just for me and everybody at home listening, what would you say exactly is a personal brand? Simplify it for us. I know that's hard, but like, what when I'm thinking about my personal, what is it? What actually is it? Because I feel like I got so many different ideas.
You know what? The way that I view personal brand, a lot of people don't look at brand architecture. Okay. Especially when you're small or when you're a business of one, they don't even understand what brand architecture is. But if you understand it to a certain degree, I believe the personal brand is a parent brand or an endorser brand, because everything that comes after the parent brand is endorsed by the parent. Unless you're something like PG&E and all these big companies where the brands up under them, they have a house of brands. They're not a branded house. So if you're on a smaller scale, your personal brand is an endorser brand, not an influencer, but an endorser brand. And if you think about endorser brands, one of my favorites, Apple. Yeah. Apple is a straight up endorser brand, but everything that comes after it is an iMac, an iPhone, an iPad. All those eyes can stand on themselves by themselves. You can call it an orange, you can call it a grape, but you cannot take anything away from iPad, iWatch, iPhone, none of those. So the parent brand, Apple, just endorses everything that comes after it. But when you're talking about your personal brand, my personal brand being the Ghetto Country Grandmother, I endorse Grandma's House. And if I can't endorse my own business the same way I endorse someone else's, then there's something wrong. I don't believe in elevator pitches anymore. Sweetie, I'm not walking around with some canned ass comments that I need to say in order to make this thing happen. All I need to do is like, you know what? We're having a conversation. What are we talking about? I can talk. You want to ask me about my business? No, I'm not going to hand you a business card unless you ask for it. No, I'm not going to tell you my rates unless you ask for it. No, I'm not going to tell you anything. This is not an elevator pitch. This is not a sales conversation.
Right.
If you're not interested, trust and believe, I'm not bringing it up. So to a personal brand for me, it's an endorser brand and it's a parent brand. Because every idea that your business is built on came from you. Then you put that into the personal brand. That personal brand endorses the business. Whether you have one business or 10 businesses, there's a personal brand that you need to build that endorses all of those. Once it gets to a certain status where the business can support itself, you can let the personal brand go if you choose to. Because now you've made a name for yourself. I might stop being the Ghetto Country Grandmother at some point, and you know what? Phyllis just walked in the room. I may get the same status and the same whatever from this, but most people, like, I want the Ghetto Country Grandmother because sometimes Phyllis just ain't feeling it. My husband came in here today. He said, I like your gym. What did he tell me? I like your split personality.
Okay, yeah.
Because when I started getting ready to come on your podcast, what that means, I go grab one of my hats. I get my glasses. I might put a little something on my lips. I'm in Ghetto Country Grandmother mode. I'm no longer in Phyllis mode because Phyllis is probably tired. She wants to do something else, whatever that is. But when I'm in Ghetto Country, sweetie, I'm here for the personal branding of it all. And so I get to come different. And it's all about the personal branding. It is not about what Phyllis did today, what Phyllis ate today, Phyllis being a mom, a wife, or whatever. If you want to know those things, I have no problem. But it has nothing to do with my personal brand. Did I answer your question?
You did.
Okay.
I'm impressed. The brand mother knows that it's red today. We got the red going on. And no, I resonate with everything you're saying, because sometimes when I'm on the podcast, I swear to God, I feel like I black out. And it's because I'm so present in the moment. I love doing it. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of sweat. But I love that sweat equity. I love what I do, but I'm not this present and engaged 24/7. I'm kind of introverted. I'm going to go hide in the corner at the end of the day. But I can show up for this podcast because I know we can impact people.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think I'm lucky. I don't even think I'm smart. But when I started my business a few years ago, we called it Balbert Marketing, Ben Albert, B. Albert Marketing. I was forming an LLC was the first thing that I thought of. The first comment I got from a friend was, nobody even calls you Balbert. And he wasn't wrong, but I just came up with it. But as I built the podcast, Real Business Connections, I've been slowly, like, I don't use Balbert very much more because if Real Business Connections has a podcast, has marketing services, has a networking group, I can exit out. Real Business Connections is not Balbert. Balbert is just my ego. I'm just coming, I'm going to use my name. Real Business Connections, I'm not going to, maybe I won't be Apple, but I could be the next Apple with Real Business Connections. We all need that. So it sounds like I'm doing something right by accident.
And the thing about it is, like, even though, like I said, to get into my mode, I put on my hat, I do my thing. I might, depending on the podcast, I might even have my bourbon and my cigar nearby. But for other people, it's not that serious. Once you put on those headphones, you know what? I'm the podcast extraordinaire. And so it puts you in a different frame of mind. I don't wear these hats. These particular hats, I do not wear out in public. I just don't. I will put a hat on, but these are not it. And this is because it's become part of my persona of, you know what? I need to get in that frame of mind to be the ghetto country grandmother. Right. Because if I get up at 7 a.m, especially when I with my international clients, I sometimes have to reset. Because if I was at home and it's 7 a.m, Neil has not made my breakfast, the coffee's not on, the dog's not saying, let me out, it's totally different. Right. But once I grab my hat and my glasses, like, come on, baby, we about to get to work. Now, my clients don't see me in my hats either, because you know what? We're in work mode. Mm. We're trying to get their brand situation taken care of.
I appreciate you dressing up for me, though, by the way.
Situation. I'm in work mode. And it's no different than if I were to go on stage for a keynote or something like that. I might wear my hat. I might not. It depends. Because a lot of times when I'm speaking, people say Phyllis Williams Schroeder. They don't say the ghetto country grandmother. But if they say, we want you to come as a ghetto country grandmother, then I might walk on stage with a, I'm not going to say I'm going to walk on stage with a bourbon, but I might have something that looks like bourbon in my cigar, but it's not lit because I'm in that frame of mind. I'm not going to talk to you like Phyllis. I'm going to talk to you like the ghetto country grandmother. And the ghetto country grandmother can be kind of harsh in facing the realities of what it is to run a business. And especially if you're running a business by yourself, if you're running a business, because I believe in like building a business this way from the personal brand up, you're starting something that also sets the foundation for a company culture, especially if you plan to have more than one employee, you being the only employee. If you understand where this personal brand is coming from, if you understand the code, which is contemplation, objectives, dedication, and ethics. If you understand the code of this personal brand, then you know how you're going to hire. Yes, you're going to hire for skill, but you're also going to find, do you fit this code? We don't have to have the exact same DNA because nobody does. But there has to be some alignment in this so that when we talk about loyalty once again, because people aren't loyal, most people aren't. But when you talk about loyalty within a business now, you know what? I fucks with this because I believe in this business. I believe in this brand. And because you set the tone for this, not only is your brand forward facing to the audience, but it's also internal. And so being able to affect that from the person that's building all of this, that's doing the first hiring, that's creating all of these different things and the packages or whatever it is that you're going to sell as a service. Sweetie, it all starts right here. But if you decide that, you know what, I am my brand, then why the hell are you hiring other people? You're saying that you're the shit and you don't need any help. That's how I see it. So why not? Why are you even being bothered with, you're just hiring based on skill? And I tell people all the time, if they got hired for a check, they will leave for a bigger check. How about that? It's a thing.
It is a thing. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us, let's possibly piss some people off. What other things? So I've talked about branding a lot. I've got a marketing background. I've had brand experts on the show. Mark Schaefer has been on the show. Rachel Jenks, the brand boss. I've got a lot of brand experts, marketers on the show. Everybody seems to disagree a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What do you disagree with? Give us some of those things that as let's just assume I'm a brand expert. What are some of the things that I start spitting out that you just completely disagree with?
Oh, my God.
Everything.
Vision, mission, and values.
Okay, talk about that.
For bigger companies, I see that as just a way to make it seem like you're tied into the community that you're trying to build. But when you're a smaller company, let's say less than 25 employees, and even some above, really, you need a mission? Or do you just need to understand why you're doing it, doing what it is that you're doing? What is the purpose? Purpose is to make some fucking money. Anyone that's in business and they're not doing it for the money, and I'm not saying wholeheartedly, but they end up giving away more than they charge. But there needs to be something there that, you know what, the purpose of this is to make money, but to also have impact. If you can understand what those two, how those two things are tied together, then you don't have to ask what someone is charging. You don't have to ask how much should I charge? Because I hear that question. Well, you charge it, sweetie. You can't charge what I charge because you don't know what I know and you don't do what I do. And now I'm talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Talk about that, because I got a problem. I know a lot of people have a problem. I have a problem with that. I've been studying this for years, but I still, okay. Like, I know a lot of stuff. And my girlfriend was telling me, like, you're charging for sifting through all the bullshit information that you had to go through to get to the answer. So instead of them spending years figuring it out, they can spend a little bit of time with you, and you can get them to that end goal way quicker. But I still probably don't charge enough. So I go through it. I'm but sure a lot of people do. Talk about that.
The thing is, you have to figure out what's enough.
Okay.
And a lot of people don't want to say, because you've been told, you know what, $10,000 a year is the goal for everybody. Why that number came out of somebody's mouth and stuck with everyone, I have no idea.
$100,000 really a year or $10,000?
That $100,000 a year. I'm sorry, $10,000 a month. I'm sorry.
Got it.
$10,000 a month or $100,000 a year.
Just a pretty number.
Okay. And that's all it is. It's a pretty number. It's a round number.
Yeah.
It's an easy number. But living in California, $100,000 is not enough. And depending on what you're doing or how experienced you are, sweetie, you don't deserve $100,000. I hate to break it to you, but you really don't. You still haven't handed out $47 classes. And you have not done the work to market or brand it. So when somebody asks me, what do I charge? Why do you want to know? Because I think I'm being cheated. Why do you think you're being cheated? Because I don't make as much as you make. Okay. I'm 58 years old. First of all, I created a multi-million-dollar business already. I achieved that. I went through a whole lot of learning experience to get to this point. And why I understand imposter syndrome and insecurities and introversion and all of these type of things. So I have this lived experience. So I charge for that. How are you trying to compare yourself to me? Oh, well, I've been in the game for 20 years. Okay. Well, I've studied this. Okay. So then how much money do you want? I had someone, I had a client that he, the whole thing was, you know what, I want to do this. And he was like, I want to make this amount of money. I said, okay, let's break it down. First, tell me how much money you want to make for a year. Within a year. And we're just going to throw out a number. He said, I want to make $50,000 a year to start. Right. I'm like, okay. I said, how much time do you want off for a year? Because a lot of people don't plan for taking time off. How much time do you want off? I said, look, because we're going to make it easy, we're going to say you want two months off per year. So that you got to make that $50,000 in 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that?
$5,000.
It's $5,000 a month. Okay, how many clients do you actually want to serve? How many can you handle? Because you might want to serve 100, which means you got to do some passive income kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But you might want to be hands-on, so you can only handle 10. So if you can only handle 10 clients a month or a week or whatever it is, that's the price you charge. Now you have to go and fact check to make sure that covers your overhead, it covers your taxes, it covers your take-home, because whatever you make, sweetie, you don't get to keep all of that. Did you consider that part? When people say I want $10,000 a month, how much of that goes back to the tax man? How much of that goes to employees? How much of that goes into advertising if you pay for advertising? How much does that go to all those different subscriptions you have for your automated business? How much of that goes back into whatever it is that you're doing, your social media manager? Is $10,000 a month really enough? Is that all you want? You have to figure that out. So if you say, I want to make this amount per year, how many clients do you actually need? For what I want to make a year, I only need 10 clients a year, not a month. And then everything else that I do outside of those 10 clients per year, because I the way that I do what I do, so we have a long-term relationship. I'm not a hit it and quit it kind of business. Mm. I'm not a done for you business. I'm a done with you kind of business, because you need to understand your brand and your marketing before you go put it out there in the world. Mm. And what I've noticed with a lot of people, even with when you have a brand strategy for a business, is totally different than when you have it for a person. Because this company has a marketing department, so they can now go and apply what this brand strategy says.
Right.
But when you're a business of one or a business of a few, sweetie, you need to understand branding and marketing enough so that when you hand it off, you make sure people are doing what you ask them to do. Make sure your social media is on point, making sure that your message stays clear, making sure that you're positioning yourself to be who you said you want to be. But you also have to recognize that that personal brand is the biggest endorser of all of it. If you're deciding that you know what, I don't want to be the face of my business, then you damn sure better make sure that somebody is. Because the best connection and the best way you beat these big ass corporations, sweetie, put a face on it. Mm. Put a face and a conversation to it. Let somebody talk about it. Because otherwise, you think you're competing. There's no competition. There's no competition. I tell my clients, there are 7 billion people in the world. And if what you do can't make you your money out of 7 billion people, then you know what? Maybe that's not what you should be doing. You got to talk about it and you got to be about it.
Profound stuff. It's Rachel Jenks, Brand Boss, is a friend of mine. In her logo, she's got a fingerprint as part of the logo. I've always loved that because we all have a unique fingerprint.
Yeah.
And I'm going on a tangent, but with AI writing better than humans, taking people's jobs, no one's going to buy from an AI. They still want to buy from a human, right? They still want to buy from Phyllis. They want to buy from the brand mother, right?
Mm-hmm. And it's funny you said that because I was working on an article. I was thinking about writing an article mm-hmm. when personal brands can't live up to the AI image. Because people, I talked to somebody about polishing the turd, and it does not make any sense because you have all of these things you want your personal brand to be. So then you have AI write all of this stuff you want your personal brand. But can you actually live up to that?
Right.
Can you actually say that I did what I put in all the parameters that I told it that I want? But can you live up to the hype? If you cannot live up to the hype of all of this, whether it's your education, because pretty sure there are a few lies in there. But as polished as AI can make it, sweetie, I am not polished. I am not flawless. I am none of those things. AI can never tell me how to do my personal brand. I don't want you to polish it. Mm. What it is what it is. And it's just like you said on my bio, it says, you know, this is where personal brands come to grow the fuck up. Mm-hmm. I can't say that AI would come up with that because that's my thing. Being a mother, being a grandmother, I want people to, you know what, rise up. Raise yourself up so that you're independent enough that it doesn't matter what the masses say. You talked about people pleasing earlier. I think that is the biggest crock of crap anywhere because that's what most branding is. Because what they tell you to do is go out and interview the audience, go take a sampling, go do surveys, find out what the people want. What if what I do, the people don't want? Does that mean I shouldn't do it? Or should I not do it for them? What I have is what I have. What I bring to the game is what I bring to the game. Sweetie, either you want it or you don't. But I'm not going to sit up here and twist myself in knots trying to give you some shit that was never there in the first place. And that's what a lot of people do. You know what? How can I make some money? You go out here and you try to make something at something you're not good at. So you struggle. You have imposter syndrome. You struggle some more. You give up. You go get a job. You bitch about the job. Then you try to start something else. You had 10 businesses in the last 10 years. And not unfit because you're not good at that thing. Because you didn't sit down and take the time to figure out, you know what? I'm good at this thing. Now, how can I monetize it? That's it. And the most unique thing about any given brand, in my opinion, is the personal brand. That's the person that's doing the thing. That's endorsing the business. If your personal brand gets out here and it does the thing that it's supposed to do, if you open your mouth, and I'm not saying let every thought that falls in your head fall out your mouth, But if you set the boundaries around what it is your personal brand brings to the game, sweetie, that's the most unique thing about it. When you talk about brand strategy from a business perspective, they always talk about the distinguishing thing. Sweetie, you're the distinction. And you need to understand what that is and what it looks like and how it can represent the business. An asset is an asset. If you take Coke and Pepsi off of brown soda water, it's just brown soda water. I got a soda fountain for that. Brand Coke and Pepsi are the ones that make it worth more. That's it.
You know that mic in front of you?
Uh-huh.
You want to pick that up and then drop it? So we always do a rapid fire round, but if you have time, what else grinds your gears? Before we go rapid fire round, give us one more thing in branding that everybody's doing it. And granted, let's be honest, part of why everybody's doing it is it did work. Yeah. It definitely worked when times were less competitive. But in this marketplace where anyone in the world can be competing against you, some of this stuff doesn't work. Well, give us one more thing that kind of grinds your gears a little bit.
One more thing that grinds my gears is people not talking about their business. And by that, they talk about what goes on in the business. Because I'm followed by a lot of creatives, and I'm probably going to get a lot of hate for this. But they all talk about the same thing. This is what branding is. This is what brand identity is. This, okay, that we already know all of that. But tell me, what do you do and how do you do it? I don't need to know your trade secrets, but sweetheart, you're telling me shit I already know. Why do I want to work with you though? I was talking to my client on Monday and I'm telling him to raise his prices. I want him to charge $50,000. She's a landscape designer. And if y'all want to go look him up, his name is Steve Griggs. It's Steve Griggs Designs. And I want him to charge $50,000 for his designs. And he's like, how do I get people to pay that? I'm like, you've been in business 35 years. You have boots on the ground. And so we talked about these certain things. And it's amazing to me how people don't see that. And I never talk about, you know, what charge what you're worth, because people are priceless to me. I don't care if I don't like you. You're still priceless. But the work, oh, baby, that has a price on it. That has a value. So when we talk about this thing, it's like, how do you do this thing? Tell me about you in this thing. You know what? I've been doing this for 35 years. Let me tell you about a client that I had. You know what? My last client was this. And this is how I approached this problem. Because your approach, your tactics, your whatever is more important to me than you telling me what brand identity is or is not. It's more important to me than you telling me, okay, well, how do you design the logo? Okay, how did you pick? When I talk about personal branding, I talk about it from a perspective of, you know what, don't be a fucking brand. That's not your job. Your job is to lead. And a lot of people, they want to be bosses. I know my daughter used to be, my daughter, when we had our restaurants, we put her to work at 9 years old. She was bossy as hell. Okay. But the difference is when you boss and when you lead, sweetie, people follow leaders. People lead bosses. It's a thing. So if you tell me how you're going to lead me down this path to give you all my money, it makes a difference than you telling me something that I can Google on what brand identity is and all of these different things. And even showing me all of your clients. I know that's a thing within graphic designs. They have what they call their quilt and all the people that they work with. Mm-hmm. I really don't give two shits. But it's like, tell me about your process. Tell me something. I don't need to know your personal life. Because we not like that. We not vibing on that level yet. But there's something that you can tell me that's relevant to how you play this game. So if you were going to tell me about podcasting, tell me something different about podcasting that no one else talks about.
The capacity.
And I'm talking to you again. Tell me something about podcasting that
no one talks about.
No one talks about.
You know, I talk about it, so people around me talk about it, but to the audience, like, I love you, but I don't podcast for them. I podcast for you. I do podcast for them, but podcasting is the greatest way to build a relationship with mentors and peers on a one-to-one business level, one-to-one level. And all we're doing is documenting the conversation. I wanted to talk to you, so we're going to have a conversation. We're going to document it so other people can listen to it. But everybody comes in, they want to be rich, they want to be famous, they want to have a lot of listeners, they want to monetize quickly. I just want to build a relationship with someone smart.
Okay. So when you decide who's going to be, and I'm flipping the script on you a little bit, because I'm asking you a question.
Yeah.
So when you decide that someone's going to be on your podcast, what makes you choose that person? What makes them, is it because they're smart or is it because you want to have a conversation? What makes you choose that person?
I want to learn from them.
Okay. So then podcasting for you is about learning. And I think talking about it from a perspective, it's not about education, because anybody can go to school and get an education. And sometimes it goes in one ear and out the other. But what you do for podcasting is like, you know what? You want to learn some shit, because when you learn some shit, you actually apply it. So it's all in the application. If you were listening today and you learned something, how are you going to apply it? And so talking about the application of what people listen to, because some people binge on podcasts.
Right.
But did you learn anything, or was it just noise in the room? Because you're here for people to learn. And in order to learn, you got to apply. What's the last thing you applied that you heard? So when you start talking about real business connections, sweetie, did you apply some stuff today? Was there anything that was said that was not applicable? Okay, let's talk about that. Because if it's wasting your time, why are you even sitting here listening to it? Podcasting is about broadening your horizons. It's about introducing you to new people, new ideas. But you have to know what ideas you're going to let in. Because when we listen to podcasts, and like you, like I said, I was listening to Mark Schaefer because I like Mark Schaefer. And he's one of the ones I listen to. I won't listen to a lot of the other ones because there's just certain things that I just don't want to hear.
Sure.
But people would rather take in 100 different ideas and confuse themselves instead of saying, you know what, this is one that I actually want to listen to. And if your voice was a predominant voice on your podcast, then sweetie, they're coming for you. But if the predominant voice on your podcast are your guests, then I want to know what you want to learn, because I'm here to learn. And so when you talk about learning and not about education, it hits different. Mm. Go to school to get an education. Go pay all that money to get an education. I want you to come here to learn. So when you learn something, act on it. And then let's talk about it. That makes you different.
The term I like to use is wisdom. And I simplify that. I like to get the wisdom. I want to be a bridge. I want to get the wisdom from the people who have it to the people who need it. And I put myself in the need it category a lot of the time. I'm in the mud learning with everybody else. I'm trying to gain that wisdom. And I believe a lot of the listeners are along with the ride because they're learning right with me. We're all leveling up together. And the term I use all the time on this podcast, and we'll do it right now, is giving people an integration assignment. Because if they listen and they don't integrate it into their life, we were just educated. I'm happy we were edutainment, but I want to make them better. So grab your pen, pencil. If you stop the gym treadmill, pull over the car. If you can't, that's okay. This will be here for us. And it's in the show notes. Someone's got their pen out. Give them just one simple integration assignment so they can take all this stuff and apply it into their lives today.
One integration assignment I would say is to set objectives. And that is not the same as setting goals. Objectives can be lifelong. And it's with the understanding that, you know what, that objective is aligned with how you want to grow your business. Now, some people don't want to grow past the business of one, and that's okay. But objectives are flexible and they're adaptable versus goals, which are hardcore. I set a goal to increase my following by 10% by this date. That whole smart shit. Specific, what is it? Specific, measurable.
Measurable, action-oriented.
Yeah, actionable, whatever. You know, there's that thing.
Time-sensitive. I don't know the R. Someone's got it at home.
When you're setting objectives, objections, objectives are actionable.
Right.
And as the personal brand, setting that objective to saying, you know what, I want to be one of the top 5%. That means that is something that you constantly work towards. But if that being that top 5% does not feed your business, then that's feeding your ego. And that's not necessarily for you.
True.
So you have to understand that my objective is, you know what, I want this to be one of the top 10 in the top 10 podcasts. So you're always looking to improve. And because you're always looking to improve, you're always learning. You're always educating yourself. You're always seeking wisdom and knowledge because you want to stay in that top 10% versus a goal of, you know what, I just want to increase by this amount by this date. That one's short term. But objectives, it's like, you know what, this impacts my life. And that's one of the things a lot of people miss. When I talk about personal branding, I'm talking about life brand and business because it's all your life.
Right.
So if I say this is what I want for my business, how does it impact my life? If I want to be in the top 10%, what does that mean for my life, for my family, for my friends, for my leisure time? All of this stuff impacts you.
Right.
And if you don't take those things in consideration of how you want to live, then like I say, you end up with the identity crisis and you think you are your business. You think you are your brand and people can get at you any kind of way they want to. I'm not here for that. So set objectives. Set objectives. Let the goals be for the business, but set the objectives for your personal brand. That would be my one thing.
Everybody's got homework. I love your wisdom. Again, I like the term wisdom because by definition, as you get older and learn more, I mean, you mm-hmm. could be 80 years old and just be learning the wrong thing for 80 years. Yes. But as we yes. gain more wisdom, we continue to level up as people. So do that assignment. Do you have time for the rapid fire round? I know we're over our regularly scheduled time. I want to be mindful of that.
No, come on with it. Come on.
Before we go rapid fire, though, because we went over our scheduled time, and that's mm-hmm. because I love learning from you, and so does the listener. Mm-hmm. Where can we get more of you?
You can get more of me on, I'm getting better at being consistent, but I do put stuff on LinkedIn. You can follow me on LinkedIn. You can follow me on Instagram. LinkedIn is my platform of choice, but Instagram is my second. Every once in a while, I put something on TikTok, or you know what? Just go subscribe to my website. I am not a troll. I'm not going to hit you every other day and all that kind of stuff, but you might get something from me once a month. Also, there's my podcast. I try to keep that to at least once a week. I've only recently missed this last week because I was on vacation, but the podcast is probably the most consistent thing. So those are all my different places you can find me.
And my team's incredible. We got show note links right below in the description, so you can do that. Rapid fire. These are just short, sweet, fun questions.
Okay.
I wrote down some random ones that specifically for you. And I wanted to start with your favorite kind of whiskey.
My favorite kind. Oh my God, that's hard. while I was on vacation, I was all into the Glenlivet. I think it was Glenlivet 15. So yes, that's 15. My favorite. Yes.
And what about cigars? Do you have a cigar?
My husband
brand?
Just introduced me to a new one. He does not smoke, but he bought me an Isla and I love that cigar. Oh my goodness, it was one of my favorites. That and Java.
It's called an Isla?
I think it was Isla or Isla, I-S-L-A.
Okay.
Because I like cigars with the sweet tip. And whenever he goes and buys me something, because he does not smoke, he always tell him she likes coffee, chocolate, and sweet. Go find me something. That's the criteria he gives when he goes into the cigar lounge.
So I got to ask one barbecue question because I like to cook, but I'm not that good at it.
Okay.
When I'm prepping and I'm dry rubbing, what's your favorite kind of dry rub?
Oh, we used to make our own.
Yeah.
You got to make your own.
Is that like a secret? What are some of the core ingredients? You could give me the recipe or you could give me a core ingredient.
You know what? I will get the recipe and I will send it to you. It's not a secret anymore. But it all depends on your flavor profile. The thing that surprises a lot of people when I tell them about barbecue, we came up in based on barbecue competitions. And a lot of times, what people cook in competition versus what they cook in their restaurant versus what they cook in their home, all different. Mm. All different. Competition, like competition ribs are usually sweeter. They're candied kind of ribs and all that kind of stuff. Whereas when we cook ribs at home, they're very savory versus ribs that we used to cook in our restaurant, they had barbecue sauce on them. So there's different things. But when you're creating a rub, you have to figure out, like, are you more on the savory or sweet side? Because, like, some pork rubs will have sugar in them and some won't. If you want a little more heat or fire to it, is it based on the cayenne or is it based on the black pepper? Because one of the things Neil taught me was that white pepper, black pepper, chili pepper, they all hit your palate at different levels. So I found that out. So it's I'm all for people making their own rub. You start with a basic one and then you tweak it till you get the flavor profile that you actually like. So that would be my thing. And even if you use somebody else's and tweak it, Neil said, everything is an ingredient.
And we can send you a connection request and DM you, because if the cooks at home want to learn more and more about this kind of stuff, I know that's not what you're doing today, but it's a good way to kind of bridge the gap, start a conversation.
Yeah, yeah. No problem. I will direct it to my husband.
Fair. Is he still cooking?
For me, yes.
For you?
For Christmas, it used to be, we got kind of burnt out on barbecue. Okay. But now I get my ribs from Mother's Day because I'm a rib fan. Unless it's fatty brisket, I'm a rib fan. So I get my ribs on Mother's Day and Christmas and all that kind of stuff and anything in between. But people keep asking us to open another restaurant because we live in Texas now. He can do it. I will not. And I know he won't do it without me. If he does, I'd be surprised, but I would still support him. I just would not do it with him. So I told him, y'all can partner with him and all that stuff. Just don't call me. Don't ask me nothing.
Let's do one more, and this is actually an assignment for people to kind of look into them. Okay. What are some of the just kick-ass brands that are just really impress you? Like, if I want an example of a good brand other than your own, what are some examples that impress you?
That is really hard for me to say, because a lot of times when we get into this disagreement, people say that Gary Vee is a brand and that Richard Branson is a brand, and I don't agree with those. I actually, just today, because one of the things that I liked about, I'm not a basketball fan, but Kobe Bryant had Black Mamba, and he said how that was what he brought out onto the court. It wasn't Kobe anymore, and I know it was after this whole situation that he had. So I actually ordered his book today. Another one that I think about when I start thinking about personal branding on the way that I do it, I also think about Beyonce and Sasha Fierce, because when she was doing her thing, it's like, you know what? It's Sasha Fierce up on the stage. It's not necessarily Beyonce. And because when I look at her, she seems like a very private person. So it's like she has to embody this whole Sasha Fierce thing that gets up on the stage and does all the amazing things that she does. While everybody else is seeing Beyonce, Beyonce is like, you know, this is Sasha Fierce thing.
Right.
And so these are the type of things when I tell people to separate their who from their do, it's like, don't get them twisted. Don't get them confused. So those are the two that actually come to mind when I think about personal brands and so forth. I don't know. And one of the reasons I ordered Kobe's book is because I don't know how far he took it, like if it went into merchandising. Even another one is Method Man. Method Man, dude's name is Earl or some crazy shit. It's like, who's going to buy a rap song for somebody named Earl? But everybody's down with Method Man. Oh my God, that dude is sexy as hell. I love my husband, but dude is sexy as hell. And I would be all over Method Man. Earl, not so much. So is those are the type of personal brands that I lean into when I talk about it. It's not so much the Gary Vee's. The only thing that I say about Gary Vee is that if I was going to say anyone, he would probably be the closest one that everybody else knows, because he's learned to leverage his name in such a way that it's not Gary Vaynerchuk, but it's Gary Vee on his media companies and all of these other things.
VCon.
Yeah. So there's all of those different things. But the rest of them, y'all can kiss my ass. I don't care what you're saying. The rest of them are not brands. They're people who have made a name for themselves, who have major companies and corporations that they lead and all of that kind of stuff. But they are not personal brands.
You know, I had never thought of the Black Mamba thing. And I love it because it ties in what we talked about. Because Kobe, if you pissed him off, he was going to destroy you. And even if you didn't piss him off, he would create a fake vision.
Yes.
He would imagine you saying something about his mother or his children. He would pretend like you did just so he could destroy you. But Kobe wasn't destroying you.
No, no.
Black Mamba was. Kobe loves you. Black Mamba would destroy you.
Not me, but like, I'm not doing this thing. And it's so, when I first heard about that story, and I never really thought about it until I got into branding. And I fully understand, because like I said, in my old life as Mrs. Mister, I promise you, my husband went to bed with Mrs. Mister more than he went to bed with Phyllis, because I had a hard time laying it down, because I had to keep it. I had to hold on to it. And so going to bed by laptop light and still working, because I had to make sure that everybody still knew who Mrs. Mister was, even though I did not want to be in the limelight. So there's a whole identity crisis that can happen with personal branding if you're not careful. And that's what I want to make sure people do not do. I want you to have a personal life and I want you to have a personal brand, but they do not have to crash, collide, and blur and all that other kind of crazy.
Well, Brandma, thanks for coming on the show. It's in the notes, but for auditory people just listening on the go, tell us one more time, like, where should we go find you? LinkedIn, Instagram?
Yeah, you, like I said, I have my own podcast that's a week behind, but it's Grandma's Podcast. That's there. That's weekly. I post a lot on LinkedIn. That is my platform of choice. I like the algorithm on that because it's not as shady as the rest of them.
Didn't LinkedIn try to cancel you, though?
They did. They straight kicked me off. They kicked me off. And
it's up to you if you want to talk about that. I have all day, but I saw you put an episode out about that.
You know what? And I promise you, I truly believe they kicked me off because somebody said something, because the crap that they came back with in the email, none of it applied. They said that I misrepresented my identity. And I'm like, no. And especially after I've sent you my passport, how are you going to still say this to me? So I really think it has something to do, because it was this very same day that I changed my bio, my headline to say where personal brands go to grow the fuck up. They were okay when I just had the empathic bitch in there. But when that came out, I promise you, like 2 or 3 hours later, I was gone. I was gone for a couple of weeks.
Wow.
And my thing is, going back to my Chris Doe interview, one of the things that he asked me, he's like, well, are you not being yourself when you don't cuss? It's like, no, I'm respecting the space. It's just like I asked you before I got here. I don't ever want to disrespect somebody else's house. And if LinkedIn tells me that my profanity is inappropriate for their platform, I have no problem.
Right.
I might not post there as much, but I have to respect the house rules. I have to respect the game. If you don't tell me that this is a problem, then how will I know? The gym that I recently started going to, number 10 on that is like, we do not tolerate profanity. I'm like, oh shit, I can't even talk in here because I know something's going to fall out of my mouth. But it's respecting the space. Because at the end of the day, when I say I take my cues from me, sweetie, my mama raised me to respect people's houses. And so that's who I am at my core. So when I'm being Phyllis, I'm always going to be respectful till you don't deserve the respect that I'm giving you. And so that goes back into being the ghetto country grandmother. If I come on anybody's podcast, sweetie, tell me the rules. Because I don't ever want you to say, well, oh, we can't air this because you cuss too much. You already knew that. If you've listened to my podcast, you know I cuss too much. By a lot of people's standards. It's not out of ignorance, which was my own crazy mindset. It's not out of being, what did somebody tell me? It's a sign of lack of intelligence. No, it's just a bunch of words. It's not my intention to mislead anyone. And that's why I say I write very corporate, and I actually have to go back in and put in a few cuss words because I don't want you to get confused by what's going to fall out my mouth when we actually have a conversation. It's crazy like that. So it's I love what I do. I love helping people. I love nurturing people. And that for me, that's what Grandma does. She nurtures people in their personal brand. I have clients that when I talk to them, they smoke. And I ask them, do you want smoking to be part of your personal brand? And they had to think about it. I said, because the thing about it is, as much as you smoke, I don't want you sitting up here having a nicotine fit and not being able to listen to your client because you're wondering when they're going to get off the phone so you can go have a cigarette.
Right.
So do you want to bring smoking into it? is going to put a lot of people off, but it might turn the right people on.
True.
So you get to make the decision. Like I said, Chris told me, he said, I don't like seeing that smoke come out of your mouth. You're not my client, so I don't care. I respect you as a mentor and the things that I've learned from you. But sweetie, I'm not trying to get you as a client. When I do Grandma's Open House, I'm going to make sure I invite you too. Grandma's Open House is my behind the scenes stuff. I don't charge. I don't tape. I don't do anything. We come back and we shoot the shit. We understand what just is. Trust me, I'm going to invite you. But I do Grandma's House because I don't like Facebook groups. I don't like closed communities and all that stuff. You come, you leave, you do whatever. It just is what it is. But for people to try and dictate the whole people pleasing part, people trying to dictate how you should represent because they want you to appeal. You don't need mass appeal. You just need the right appeal.
Mm.
That's it. So
dang.
I'm gonna stop taking up your time.
You're welcome into my house anytime. Let me know about this group you've got going on. I'd love to join you. And this is one of the longer podcasts. I mean, we ran long, but do you know why we ran long?
Because we have a good conversation.
Yeah, we're bringing insights that can really help people. So as we talked about, let's go ahead and implement some of the things we learned today. Take the inspiration, inject steroids into our own personal brands, into our own businesses. And any final words? It feels weird shutting this off because I could do all day with you. But any final any final words for the listener at home?
The only final word I would have is find that unique thing that someone would tell you that's wrong. It's if you're a candid person, then bring that to the brand. Don't try and soft soap and soft sell. If you're candid, then let people know that. So that when they deal with you, you don't have to try and dumb down that candidness that you would actually bring. If you sing, is there something that you can bring to the game? One of my newest clients, he's my youngest brand baby. He likes rap, but I can tell he's a very shy person. He's doing hookah vapes because he wants to have an alternative to smoking cigarettes and tar and nicotine and all of that kind of stuff. And so the name of his company is called Vibe Smoke, V-Y-Y-B-E. Now, so because he's that kind of shy person, we had to bring the whole kind of rap vibe to it. Mm-hmm. So we talk about his brand being Smoking Lyrics. And it's still the whole Vibe Smoke, but Smoking Lyrics is how he gets his message across. Because he's that person, that lyricist, who happens to smoke, sweetie, bring it to the game. So it's understanding what is unique about you. Because I say, you are the distinction. You can find some other distinction for the business later on. But right now, as you're building, as you're growing, sweetie, there's something distinct about you that you need to bring to the game. And that's the thing that I will leave you with.
Boom. I love it. Vibe Smoke, Smoking Lyrics.
Vibe, like, smoke,
yeah. Sign me up. This sounds fun. This sounds groovy. So listen, we'll talk offline. I'm happy to come support you any way I can. We'll have you back in the later future. And thanks once again for coming on the show.
No problem. Fun, this was fun. I like these kind of conversations.
Till next time.